From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! In an extraordinary decision, the World Bank and IMF announced they will scale back their upcoming meetings in Washington, D.C. to just 2 days for fear of mass protests. Activists say they'll sue if police keep them from the meetings. The fallout from state violence in Genoa continues as another protester is found dead. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi says upcoming international summit should take place in Africa. As the world focuses on the controversy surrounding the UN conference against racism, we'll look at a much less publicized but potentially more important UN meeting on racism in the United States. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. With three justices taking the rare step of disqualifying themselves because of their ties to a murder victim's son, an evenly divided Supreme Court yesterday turned down a request for a stay of execution from a Texas prisoner scheduled to be put to death tomorrow. The justices, Antonin Scalia, David Souter, and Clarence Thomas, all have professional relationships with J. Michael Luttig, a prominent federal appeals court judge whose father was murdered in a botched carjacking in Texas in 1994. Because a majority is needed for a stay of execution, the court's 3-3 decision was a defeat for the death row prisoner Napoleon Beasley. A vote of a majority of justices is required for a stay of execution, which would be 5 in normal cases and 4 in this case, with only 6 justices sitting. Yesterday, the head of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund and a veteran death penalty lawyer, George Kendall, said a tie shouldn't go to the executioner. In New Orleans, a prisoner on death row in Texas since 1984 deserves a new trial because his lawyer slept during parts of his murder trial. Yesterday's opinion said the lawyer for the prisoner, Calvin Burdine, dozed off enough and long enough to deprive the defendant of his right to legal representation. Burdine was convicted of stabbing his lover, W.T. Wise, to death in 1983. Burdine confessed to the police but now denies killing Wise. Burdine came within moments of execution in 1987 before a court granted a reprieve. Militant farmer José Bové and 2,000 supporters returned this past weekend to the same McDonald's restaurant he helped dismantle 2 years ago, this time holding a more restrained rally to protest unchecked globalization and demand support for farmers. About 70 police officers in southern France cordoned off the parking lot to prevent the protesters, many wearing shirts that read "The world is not merchandise," from approaching the McDonald's. Large signs that read "Closed due to threats" were hung on the restaurant's windows. Bové and his allies pledged to continue their protests as long as necessary to gain support from the French government for farmers hit by a U.S. surcharge against Roquefort cheese, which is made in a nearby village. The protesters have targeted McDonald's as a symbol of how unchecked globalization can trample local culture. They lifted their siege of the McDonald's this morning. The Irish Republican Army dealt a major blow to the Northern Ireland peace process today when it announced it's abandoning a disarmament plan that had fueled hopes of progress in the volatile province. The IRA, in a statement, cited the rejection of its olive branch on disarmament by the province's pro-British unionists and accused Britain of failing to fulfill its obligations in the peace process. The arrest in Colombia of 3 Irishmen suspected to be Republican militants, thought by authorities to have been involved in training a left-wing guerrilla group in bomb-making and other techniques, has fanned unionist skepticism about the IRA's avowed commitment to peace. Britain suspended home rule and government for 24 hours last weekend, using a legal loophole to buy more time for talks on saving the Good Friday Accord. But Sinn Féin reacted with fury, accusing Britain of pandering to unionists who say they will no longer share power with Sinn Féin and the government while the IRA holds arms. This news from Jenin in the West Bank. Israeli tanks and bulldozers thrust into the West Bank town of Jenin today in what they say was a retaliatory strike following 2 recent Palestinian suicide bombings. The overnight raid was the deepest military incursion into Palestinian territory since an uprising against Israeli occupation flared last September after peace talks stalled. Palestinian gunmen put up fierce resistance as the tank-led armored force, helicopter gunships overhead, rumbled through the darkened streets to the governor's office and raised tased a nearby police building. The force withdrew about 3 hours. The Palestinian Authority branded the operation a declaration of war and said it appealed to the United Nations Security Council for international protection.
Search for cash. Everybody wanna be some fat tycoon. Everybody wanna be on a tropic honeymoon. Nobody wanna sing a little bit out of tune or be the backbone of a rebel platoon. It's too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of bills they gotta pay? No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some are willing to play the villain, they just chilling to pass the time. Pass the information, we'll pass the wine. Pass the buck, we'll pass the baton. But you can't pass the police or the Pentagon. The IRS or the upper echelon. I think it's time to make a move on the contradiction. Bomb, bomb. Rock the nation. Kick over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb. The truth shall come. Give the corporations a complication. Bomb, bomb. Rock the nation. Kick over television and radio station. Bomb, bomb. The truth shall come. Give the corporations a complication. Say what? This is the dawning of our time. I say it one more time to emphasize the meaning of my rhyme.
Rock the Nation by Michael Franti and Spearhead from his CD Stay Human. You are listening to Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Organizers of protests at next month's annual meeting of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank yesterday accused the two financial bodies of demonizing the movement against corporate globalization by citing fear of violent protests and deciding to cut back their joint gathering in Washington from 1 week to 2 days. The activists described as a partial victory the extraordinary weekend decision by two of the most frequent targets of protester pressure, saying it proved that the ranks of those opposed to the brand of economic globalization advocated by the IMF, the World Bank, and other multinational agencies and corporations were growing and their calls for change being noted. But they stressed that, scale back or not, the meetings, now set for September 29th and 30th, rather than stretching into early October as initially planned, would still take place in the same closed-door fashion and in pursuit of the same policies on loans and aid to poor countries. The activists also said they were concerned over a request by the Washington Metropolitan Police for millions of dollars in federal aid to pay for riot gear, including some $1,800 in flame-retardant suits for some officers, and to hire officers on temporary duty from police departments as far away as New York City. They also threatened legal action if police kept protesters far from meeting sites. We're joined on the phone now by Jokey Jehu, who is the director of the 50 Years is Enough campaign in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Jokey.
Thank you, Amy. I'm glad to be here.
Well, how did you manage to pull off this one, get the bank and IMF to abbreviate their meetings?
Well, I think they did that all on their own. We have maintained for years that these institutions are not open to public scrutiny, and I think that we believe that in terms of reducing the number of meeting days is that they think that there will be less public scrutiny. We are continuing to plan. Nothing has changed. Because, of course, the point of all of this is not the meetings. The point is the policies and practices of these institutions. If they had announced that the debts were being cancelled, the structure adjustment programs were being stopped, that their meetings were now going to be open to the media and to the general public, that they were going to be meeting with affected communities and citizens around the world, then we would have declared victory and closed down the 50 years is enough office. But that hasn't happened, so the struggle continues.
What does it mean when they say they're cutting the meeting from around a week to 2 days? What actually gets cut?
Well, as the Washington Post noted on Saturday, a lot of the events that happen over 2 weeks are events that are about wining and dining and cheese receptions for corporations and businesses. The actual meetings of the institutions, there are two committee meetings. They usually happen on the Saturday and Sunday, or Sunday and Monday, which is why on April 16th and on previous years, the Sunday meeting is the one that has been targeted. And then they have 3 days usually of official meetings. That's when you see the, you know, heads of state, like, you know, in 1999 when President Clinton addressed the meetings here in Washington. The actual official meetings are 3 days. The rest of them are series of seminars that cost anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000. Corporations and businesses and consultants and other people who are looking to benefit from the largest of these institutions participate in.
What about the preparations of the D.C. mayor and police for the anticipated protests, September 29th and 30th?
It's completely outrageous. They are talking about, the original report was that they were asking the federal government for $50 million. Now that the meetings have been scaled back from 6 days to 2 days, apparently they're asking for $35 million. They met yesterday with the White House, and the White House seems to be willing to support this request for funding. But in a city that, you know, has very few public services left, you know, the parking meters here are privatized, the money goes to Lockheed Martin, D.C. General, the hospital that catered for 80,000 uninsured citizens of D.C. is being privatized. All kinds of services are being cut because there's no money available to provide for the residents of Washington, D.C. But the city government and the police department is going to a great deal looking for money to basically repress activists and militarize the city of Washington, D.C. And this for two institutions that do not pay a single penny in taxes to the District of Columbia.
We're talking to Jyoti Jehu. She is the director of the 50 Years is Enough campaign. Well, it's beyond 50 years that the World Bank and the IMF were established, Jyoti.
Yes. We believe, we have maintained that our campaign, when it was launched in 1994, was kind of a line in the sand, saying that we had had enough of the policies, the economic and development model that these institutions have pushed, and that line continues to stand because they haven't changed very much. The rhetoric has changed, the gestures have changed, but the fundamental content of these institutions' policies haven't changed. So we maintain our position that it is enough.
I want to bring Sylvia Federici into this discussion with Jyoti Jehu. Sylvia Federici is a professor at Hofstra University, and she was in Parma, Italy, when the Genoa protests were taking place. And then there were secondary protests in Parma and Rome and a number of other places. And I wanted to talk with the two of you about what you feel are the successes or the strengths of the protests and the weaknesses. Sylvia Federici, were you surprised to hear from Italy that the protests in Genoa led to the shortening of the World Bank IMF meetings here?
No, I was not surprised at all, because, in fact, in the days following the Genoa demonstrations, immediately the government, the Berlusconi government, announced that they would try to move two upcoming meeting, one by NATO that is going to be held in Naples, in fact, on around September 26th, and the other one a meeting by FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization, which is a UN agency, that is going to be held in Rome in November. And there has been now a storm of criticism, discussion, debates in Italy around this proposal. In fact, particularly because Berlusconi wanted to move the FAO meeting to Africa and suggested Kenya, in fact.
Why?
Well, it's very interesting. I think there is a number of reasons. There's really a number of reasons. I guess, first of all, there is the illusion that if they bring it to Africa, there's not going to be protest there. I think there's a tremendous ignorance on the side of the Italian government, and they don't realize that, in fact, much of the protest against the IMF, the first and most massive protest, I'd say, against the IMF and World Bank, were in Africa itself, were in places like Nigeria, like Ghana, Zambia, because these were the regions that felt first and most forcefully the impact of structural adjustment program, which have had a totally devastating impact on the life of people at every level. So but there's probably the illusion that, in fact, by removing it from Europe, either the protest will be less challenging, or it will be more hidden from the media, and that, you know, government, African government, can repress it with more impunity.
I want to ask Jokey, aren't you from Kenya?
Yes, I am.
What is your response to the Italian Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, saying that these meetings should be moved to Kenya?
Well, I mean, I think there's a tacit, nod to governments that it is okay to repress and to torture and to mistreat activists, and in particular anti-corporate globalization activists. It's not an accident that they would suggest Kenya, because they know what the government there has done to protesters in the past. Even on April 16, 2000, a few days before the A16 protest here in Washington, D.C., despite the fact that the Kenyan government supports the cause for debt cancellation, they arrested 62 people who were making those calls and marching on the World Bank office in Nairobi in April of 2000. So it is, that request by any government saying, let's move, we fear protest, let's move it to Kenya, or let's move it to another country, let's move it to Singapore or Qatar for that matter, is an acknowledgement that there are governments which are going to repress and which are going to put all kinds of violate people's human rights, and they do that with the consent of the international community. The government of Italy should be ashamed to even suggest that, because they are actually declaring open season on activists, not just in Kenya, but around the world.
Silvia Federici, you have long looked at the Italian colonial legacy in Africa. Can you talk about that for people outside of your country to understand where Berlusconi is coming from?
History, but there's a history also that is more recent. For instance, I want to remain with Kenya, if anybody who travels today along the coast of Kenya, particularly in places such as Malindi, I suggest a visit to Malindi to get a very graphic first impact with Italian colonialism in Africa today. Because Malindi, for instance, is a place which has been bought up. People have been expropriated of their land, clearly with the collusion of the Kenyan government or Kenyan local authorities, in order to construct a village, a tourist village. Not only a tourist village, actually a village where Italians can retire. You go to the street and you see the sign in the shop saying, come, retire, buy land, buy a bungalow, buy an apartment here in Malindi. The street sign are in Italian. The supermarket sign are in Italian. You actually feel you're walking into a completely colonial village. And I've spoken with people when I was there. I went there just to see, because African friend told me I had to. And, Africans told me that even the last few jobs, the ones they could do, now they've been taken away from them. So that situation is definitely not unique, clearly with the collusion of the local authorities. I find the same ways in other places, for example, Nigeria, where when I was there, I discovered, for instance, that Italian, firms were involved, in projects that had been the cause of massacres in the north of the country just a couple of years before I'd gone. A famous case is that of Bacalori, in Sokoto State, where, for example, an Italian firm was involved in an irrigation process. A project that led to the expulsion of at least 40 villages, led to the expropriation of 40 villagers, and to 3 days of massacres against these villagers, who obviously resisted, being you know, being deprived of their land.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves, but we're going to come back to this very important discussion and also talk about the latest news of another protester being found dead, protester in Genoa. We're talking to Sylvia Federici. She is a professor at Hofstra University in Long Island, professor of and coordinator of the Committee for Academic Freedom in Africa. And on the telephone with us from Washington, D.C. is Jokey Jehu, who is director of the 50 Years is Enough campaign. In our last segment today, we're going to look at a conference that has gotten very little attention but could be as or more significant than the U.N. Conference Against Racism that's taking place in Durban. And it deals with the issue of racism, particularly in the United States. Stay with us.
Coming up at noon on Living Room, a one-hour course in understanding and appreciating modern poetry. Check it out with host Chris Welch from noon to one. This is KPFA 94.1 FM.
You are listening to Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. The fallout from state violence at last month's G8 meeting in Genoa continues. Another Genoa protester has been found dead. While it's not clear that her death was related to the protest, she's a well-known labor activist in Padua and was at the G8 protests. Her body was found on a riverbank with a broken neck near Padua. And Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi said last week that his government is considering moving the UN World Food Summit scheduled for Rome in November to an African location, saying African countries support the idea because they want to be closely involved in issues that affect them. The Prime Minister's stance has provoked indignation among opposition politicians, critics saying the Italian state is abdicating its responsibility to ensure a forum for lawful protest and undermining other governments' determination to stand firm against extremists. The suggestion should also prompt criticism that Italy is trying to export violence to Africa and raises the legacy of Italy's colonial history and the continent. We're talking to Sylvia Federici of Hofstra University and coordinator of the Committee for Academic Freedom in Africa, and Jokey Jehu of the 50 Years is Enough campaign in Washington, D.C. On this issue of the NATO summit possibly being moved, what's the significance of that, Professor Federici?
I think it's very significant because within the context of Genoa and within the context of the repression and particularly the discussion that is going to be expected at this NATO meeting, which is the discussion of the missile defense shield. Remember, so far, the Italian government is the only government who has given a sort of unconditional support, enthusiastic support to the idea. So they can very well expect, in fact, it's already been announced that there will be a strong demonstration. The mobilization is going on as of now. So they are very much concerned, and they would like to move it. Particularly since in Naples, there is the mayor in Naples, Iervolino, who is a woman of the center-left coalition. She has refused. She refuses to militarize Naples in the same ways that Genoa was militarized. She has said she's not going to shut down Genoa. And so the debate is going on, but I don't think it's going to be moved because now there is a sentiment, even within the government coalition, the government right-wing coalition, that Italy would lose its pride, its national pride. In a sense, Italy has to show the world that they can keep order. So that, but it shows that it's very, very important. I think that these people have to understand that now, you know, few leaders that are shaping the destiny of the world, they claim the right to shape the destiny of the world, cannot any longer meet as they have done in the past unchallenged, that, you know, people are beginning to mobilize, expose, denounce, refuse to accept that this concentration of power and this abuse of power. Why should eight white men decide the destiny of the world? Very interestingly, they did not suggest to move the G8 to Africa because the contradiction, the fact that these eight white people are deciding for people in Africa, people in Asia, people in Latin America and so forth, would have stood out, you know, too clearly. But this is what is happening. The fact that now people are challenging that and they are beginning to feel that impact, I think, is extremely significant and important.
I want to go to the issue of media, first to Jokey Jehu and then back to Sylvia Federici talking about how it went in Italy. One of the major issues raised around your prime minister becoming prime minister is that he now, being a major owner of the media, owns the entire national media in Italy, both the public and the private media, and how that affected the protests in Genoa, being a part of those meetings. But first, Jokey, you were not at the Genoa protests, were you?
No, I was not. I was actually in Kenya participating in a regional seminar involved in working with people in nine Eastern African regional countries who are working to build capacity and build a strong network on economic justice issues and debt in particular.
Well, I wanted to ask, and also you were central to the protests, the A16 protests last year, the World Bank protests on April 16th. How you deal with the media, the age-old issue that unless there is violence or property destruction, the media doesn't cover it, and then when they do, they deal mainly with the property discussion and the destruction. I was here during the Genoa protests. There was almost on the Sunday talk shows almost no mention of them, except to say that Bono refused to go because he felt they would be violent. Jokey, you work with the media. How do you frame the discussion so that they're dealing with the issues?
Well, it's a very difficult challenge and one that, you know, we've tried all kinds of different things. You know, for September this year, we are working in kind of a media collaborative that includes Jobs with Justice, 50 Years, Essential Action, and Institute for Policy Studies and the Center for Economic and Policy Research to really try and focus and get the media to talk about the issues. It's a real challenge, and for me, one of the things that I keep doing is challenging the media to really cover the issues. When they talk about violence and they talk about the, for instance, the build-up and militarization here in Washington, to, you know, to point to the fact that this is being done in, you know, with reference to what happened in April 2004, A16. Well, the fact of the matter is that of all the hundreds of people who were arrested, not a single one was convicted despite the attempts by the prosecutors here to make those charges stick. So it's okay to talk about, they can talk about the possibility of violence, but not to do it in a way that implies or that does not actually refer to the fact that what they are using as an excuse is something that did not actually happen. The reality versus the hype are two different things. And to come back to the issues back and again and again, when they talk about that they think there's going to be violence and that they need this money, to say, well, how come they haven't rallied those kinds of resources so that DC General will not be privatized? To talk about the fact that these institutions are not good corporate citizens of the District of Columbia. They don't pay taxes. If they care so much, you know, the bank and the fund issued a statement saying they were concerned about the city of Washington. It's rhetoric. It's like their rhetoric around poverty reduction. If they care so much, they should be contributing by contributing to the tax base here in Washington. It's a real challenge and a challenge that I keep putting on the heads of journalists to really cover the issues and not to do the easy story, you know, just looking and making generalizations, but to really talk about who are the people who are involved in this, how long have they been involved, what are the issues behind it. It's a real challenge and one that we keep pushing every single day.
I wanted to get reaction. A senior official at the International Monetary Fund declared this week that the fund is not obligated to promote human rights around the world, responding to accusations